you're listening to episode 5 of season 7 of the GNU World Order. Hi everyone, this is the GNU World Order. My name is Klaatu. This show is about technology and Linux and GNU and things of that nature. This episode is going to be a little bit biased toward digital media and content creation and stuff like that. So if you're not interested in that sort of thing, and you really are more interested in the networking and loading modules and drivers and interesting stuff like that, this episode might be a good one to skip over. But otherwise, it should be an interesting discussion about workflow of digital video, and this is kind of a response to a question that someone in IRC had asked me. Nothing groundbreaking, but just some thoughts and observations, and maybe some information on Linux tools that are out there to get stuff done in multimedia. So we'll see how it goes. That's a person's handle name. 5150 in IRC had asked me, what did, for instance, Cadian Live or any quote-unquote professional video editor do that, for instance, Kino or, I don't know, some other, like, what would it be, PityV, something like that, does not do? Like, what's the real functional difference? And when he first asked me that, I mean, a couple of things came to mind right away, of course, but I realized that just kind of rattling off jargon would kind of be useless, probably, because it doesn't really give you any kind of background as to why those things are perceived as necessary. And I always approach that kind of question really, really carefully anyway. And it's something that I actually get asked a lot, not necessarily only in the Linux world, you know, also in the kind of like, I want to do multimedia of some sort. What system should I be looking at? Do I have to pay this amount for this kind of computer, or can I get by with less? And, you know, which video editor should I get? Should I get the pro version or the non-pro version? All these different questions, and it's so difficult to answer because there's always this burning secret knowledge really, really deep down that you don't need anything practically. You know, I mean, it's all icing on the cake at some point, and mainly what you really want is something that can edit your material, whether it's video or music or whatever you're doing. That's all you need. And at some point, and that's kind of the tricky thing, I think, it becomes bonus. And I think the really difficult part to find is to define where that bonus part kicks in. So for instance, let's take something really simple. GIMP. GIMP, I mean, not that that's all that simple, but GIMP itself, like, let's say you're a still photographer. All you need is a camera, and technically speaking, that's it, right? Okay, now if we up it and say, well, in the modern world, you really are going to be using a digital camera, and you're going to want to do retouching, because the straight out of the camera, it's just very rarely is it really that good. Plus, it's kind of like an accepted part of the workflow now. It's like, if you're doing photography, you're using a digital camera, there's an expectation to be able to have a digital dark room, as it were, which is sort of a generic term. If you were at the Hacker Public Radio panel at OLF 2 years ago, you'd have known that it's a very generic term, meaning that you're going to take your digital photo and you're going to manipulate it in some way, i.e. you're doing something with that photo that traditionally would have been done with chemicals and enlarger and lighting filters in a darkroom, but you're doing it digitally. So it's a digital darkroom, meaning you need some program that can do that. Now, that might be Shotwell, it might be Digicam, it might be GIMP. You don't really know. It depends on the user to some degree. It depends on what exactly they're looking to do. And it depends. In all honesty, usually those applications are all one really needs. There might be some things in there that are missing that, for instance, Photoshop or Lightroom by Adobe, or even Aperture by another company that I've sworn not to really mention in this season at all. Those applications may have features above and beyond, in some areas, what GIMP and Digicam and other things like that offer. Whether you're going to use those options, those extra features, that's the real question, right? Because at that point, I mean, yeah, great, you've got the extra options, you're never going to use them, so you may as well not have those extra options. And I find that in real life, that's very frequently the case. For some reason, I don't know if it's just in the computer world or if it's elsewhere, I have a feeling, a gut instinct that it's probably elsewhere, but I've encountered it in computing. People tend to kind of like overbuy because no one wants to ever outgrow what they've invested their money into. So they think, oh my gosh, you mean I can't do such and such right now? well, then I can't invest my time and money into that thing because I need it to have it in the application right now. So they go out and get something else. But why? Why are you doing this? Why go to Photoshop or something if you're never going to use this set of features? And basically you're spending time, maybe money if you're not downloading it off the internet and cracking it, to learn this model, to learn this application and the way that they do things. And you may never even use the feature that's kind of the thing that's pushing you in that direction. Even on proprietary systems, I've seen little applications. They're little GUI applications. They're cheap, 20, 40 bucks at the most. And they're based on Image Magic. And they've got a really nice, pretty front end. And they're native. And you can use these things and they'll do everything that Photoshop would do. 9 times out of 10. Like in terms of like, you open up Photoshop and you do this function, that application will do it. And it's really weird. People get really married to certain silly little features, little tiny features. And the psychology I'm a little bit familiar with because I myself had little features here and there in especially video editor that I really kind of thought, because it was the only thing I'd ever known, I just thought that's a video editor. That is the video editor. And if I cannot find an application with enough features to get me editing, plus that one little extra stupid feature that I absolutely insist must be in a video editor, then I cannot use that. And that's silly. And quite possibly, if Cadian Live had been even where it was today, like 2 years ago, I wonder if I would have accepted it, because I might have still been too sort of married to that old model of a video editor has to do these certain things. Actually, 2 years ago sounds a little bit more like 4 or 5 years ago, I think, because I've been using Linux for a while now, actually. So, yeah, it would have had to been a while ago, because I switched over to GIMP really, really early on. So maybe I'm wrong about that. But I could see how someone like me would be thinking in that direction there. So point is, you have to kind of get around the preconceptions of what some tool is going to do and just kind of get used to the fact that there are different tools out there. And just because they don't follow the exact model of these things that you got taught in university or on the job, whatever, that doesn't mean that they're not suitable tools. And realistically, you have to really sit down and look at what features you actually need. And of course, it's going to be different for everyone, right? Because some people, their workflow has a certain thing, and if you take that certain thing away from them, then it kind of, the whole house of cards crumbles, right? It's just like, what do you mean I can't do my lower thirds with that template anymore? Suddenly, everything's over for them. They can't operate. And that's a valid complaint, like, especially in the real world. Like at home, doing stuff for yourself, not that big of a deal. You can probably stand to work around it. But if it's in the real world, there are clients waiting for their videos and stuff like that, and you're saying, well, you're not going to be doing lower thirds in After Effects anymore. You'll be doing them in Blender. That's going to slow things down drastically. And realistically, it's not going to happen. Okay, so I'm talking about all these steps without really giving you an idea of what these steps are. So I want to review a typical workflow of film production process. There's the shoot, obviously. I'm not going to get into that because there's really not a whole lot of place for Linux on a film shoot or even a video shoot, to be honest. You got a camera and you got lights and actors and stuff and you get the footage. So that's the production. After the production, the thing moves into post-production. And of course, I haven't even talked about pre-production. So pre-production, of course, you could use Linux all over the place. OpenOffice or LibreOffice, heck, even just Emacs, to be honest. Well, Libre you might need for, like, spreadsheets and stuff like that for budgeting. But Emacs for your scheduling, org mode, breakdowns, org mode, screenplay writing, Emacs, screenwriter mode, and lots of other things. So, yeah, Linux could be all over the place in pre-production. Production, no computers involved, per se. And then it moves into post-production. And this is where, well, there's a variety of different things that you could see kind of Linux being involved. So the first step is you ingest the footage. And this is kind of the territory of the assistant editor. You ingest the footage, meaning that you get it into your computer somehow. And traditionally, or I guess you'd say traditionally, I don't really know, but like a couple of years ago, that would involve capturing the footage, like via FireWire or a USB capture device, whatever. That is ingesting or importing, some people call it. I think importing now has become sort of secondary term. A lot of people say ingest. So we're ingesting the footage, and then we need to make some kind of project file for our or project in a video editing application. Now, you have to stop and ask yourself, did the footage I just ingest, is that compatible with the video editor that I intend to use? Now, that's a question you could actually ask yourself during pre-production, much less during production. Because if you know that you're shooting on a camera that absolutely is using a codec that simply will not work in your video editor, then you should probably reassess your plan, because that's a bad idea. On the other hand, it doesn't always happen that way. And so you have to kind of, if you're just in the post process and someone brings you footage and says, okay, now edit it for me, which happens a lot in my life, it seems, then you didn't really have a say as to what that was. And at some point you've got to look at the files and almost make a call on, well, what am I going to edit this on? Can I edit it on my chosen platform or not? And interestingly enough, I've run into that issue so far about 0 times on Linux, and it used to be a daily concern on my old operating system, because they were so entrenched in the codec war that they couldn't be bothered to actually incorporate, you know, compatibility, and you literally, it was something that I dealt with, like, a lot, and I think I've probably said it before, that was one of the main driving forces to get me away from a proprietary operating system, was the codec incompatibility issue. So, you make a project file, and then you look at it, and you say, okay, this is my editor, this is my footage, do they talk to each other? Well, if they do not, then you need to transcode. And of course, that's where you send it to some other program that can talk all those different codec languages, and it transcodes it into something that your video editing application will deal with. Now you can edit. That's the assistant editor's job. Once that's all finished, generally speaking, you've got a project with all the clips that are needed for that movie or whatever in the bin or the project tree, whatever you're going to call it, and this file gets saved, and it basically gets passed on to the assistant editor, who then takes all that footage and strings it all together into a rough assembly, and then that gets passed on to the editor, and they do their magic. They tell the story, making cuts, rearranging clips, rearranging scenes, putting in cutaways, all that fancy stuff. And this goes on for a while. When that's finished, the footage, which up until now has looked and sounded really, really raw, and believe it or not, that's actually how they edit. They edit really ugly looking footage, and the sound is horrible. They just keep editing. And then they send it out to the colorist, and the colorist takes their project and color times it, makes sure that all the color balances make sense, and that they match. Well, first, that they match, and then second, that they either make sense or convey some kind of emotion. You know, if it's a nice warm spring or summer day, add a little bit of orange in there, make it really warm, whatever. That's the color timing step. Once the colorist is finished with that, they send it on over to the compositor, because nowadays, generally speaking, there's some effect that you need to composite in. People know that they can composite, they can do special effects, so they send it to the compositor to generate some kind of effect. It might be some sparks flying out of blacksmith's anvil and hammer thing when they hit the thing with the other metal thing. There's sparks. Might be a laser gun. Might be a lightsaber effect. Of course, lightsaber is a trademarked term, so I use it as an example, not encouraging you to use the term lightsaber in anything but done by you, since it is not Creative Commons content. But whatever you're compositing, I mean, it could be a 100-foot lizard going through the city. It could be anything. Point is that you need to get something that doesn't exist in real life into that picture that people photographed, the moving pictures that people photographed in real life. So that is compositing. Once compositing is finished, then you're done with your special effects, and you may need to recolor it. You know, you might want to send it back over to the colorist for just retouching or something like that. Generally speaking, the compositor is the one making sure that the composited effect matches with the color timing and everything. So that should all go together okay. After that, you send it over to the editor again. And the editor, and at this point, by this time, usually it's the editor and the director, and if you've got a meddlesome producer, then they'll be in the room as well. Or it might be the same person, you know, I mean, in my case, it usually is. But it might not be. You might have an editor and a director, or possibly all three. They're usually in on this. They look at this picture it's been edited, it's been color corrected, it's been composited. It should look pretty much like it's going to look now. So they might re-edit it just here and there. Hopefully not, because it's been worked on a lot now, but they might. You never know. And whenever they feel like it's ready to go, like they're happy with it, they declare a picture lock. Picture lock means we're not editing the picture anymore. We could export it as a full quality, complete movie right now, the video portion of it, and that would be it. That would be the picture lock, that the No more changing anything. This is an important step to be in for two reasons, and really you should have a picture lock, an ostensible picture lock before the compositing. A little bit fuzzy here, but sort of want to have your picture lock before the compositing, because you certainly don't want your compositor to be working on, you know, frame by frame rotoscoping, and then for you to decide that, eh, that scene wasn't really necessary after all. Bad idea. So you've got a sort of a mental picture lock before it ever gets to the colorist or the compositor. But especially the composite, you'd want to make sure that those scenes were locked in. After that, I mean, you know, concurrent working is going on, so you could be editing other areas of it as long as the composited shot is still the same. So after all that's done, though, it needs to be declared picture lock. And the reason it needs to be declared a picture lock is because then it's going to get passed on to the audio mixer. The audio mixer takes the sound track, or the sound, well, the audio tracks from the video editing application. They take that into their audio application, and they do their magic. They edit the audio, they clean it up, they remove a little bit of noise, not much, because it's really hard to get rid of noise, so they do that sort of thing. They add the big sound effects, they add the footsteps, the Foley sounds, they put in the music, they put in the effects, like the background noise and stuff like that. All that stuff, it's done after a picture lock. Why is it done after the picture lock? Well, because you don't want the sound artist to spend 8 hours on a dialogue scene, and then you decide, wow, that dialogue scene doesn't really need to be in there, let's just cut it. That doesn't happen. Picture has been locked, you send it to the audio mixer. They're editing the audio and fixing it up and making it sound really cool and mixing it, and then they send it back to the editor. At this point, it's all married together. You've got basically two objects. You've got the picture lock that you could have just exported as a full resolution, uncompressed video file. And you've got the audio file, which again is, it's actually not just one file, usually it's a couple of files. There's the dialogue file.
For that little while, you were young.
There's the background noise file. And Foley file. And then there's the music file.
It's over, you go on to your other life, but for that little while, you were young. You were old. You died.
So that's usually about three tracks. And if you've ever, and the reason for that is because if you've ever seen a dubbed movie, like, if you went to Germany and watched a movie that was produced here, then they've got the same music, they've got the same background noise, but they were able to kill the dialogue somehow and put German voices in. How did they do that? Well, that's because they're delivered as separate tracks. And if you've ever had like a bootleg soundtrack to something, you know, that didn't get an official soundtrack release, sometimes an editor will take the soundtrack track and cut it up and kind of release it as a bootleg album. Not supposed to do that, by the way, but do what you gotta do to get the music to the people. So they take all these files, let's say four files, they combine them into their editing application or however they're going to do this, and then they export the thing as a full quality movie or deliver it to whatever place is going to press them as DVDs or print them back to film or whatever is going to happen with this thing, and that's called the delivery. You've just delivered the final project. That's the workflow. That's the lifespan, at least in the post-production, of a movie or any multimedia project. I mean, if it's got video and sound, it goes through in some form or another that process. I say all of this for two reasons. Number one, because I do kind of want to step through this again now and give you an idea of Linux edition, the Linux version of this, which you're going to be happy to hear is pretty complete. The other thing I wanted to talk about after that was kind of compare some of the video editors on Linux with a heavy bias toward the one that is the best, which is KDenLive. Okay, so ingesting the video, this is trivial in Linux. It has been trivial for a while. With DVGrab for FireWire devices and Video 4 Linux for USB devices, you have multiple ways of ingesting footage. But like I say, nowadays, there's so much solid state or hard drive recording going on that you don't even have to do that much. You just open up Dolphin and drag the files to your file manager, you know, to your hard drive, and you're done. You've just ingested the media. One note about that is that if you've ever seen a camera, have you ever seen a camera? You probably have. Okay, well, if you've ever seen a digital camera with one of those SD cards and pop that in, put it into PC mode or whatever, plug it into your computer, it comes up as a hard drive. There's a folder usually, and it's got some weird name, and then you go into that, and there's four other folders, and they have weird names, and you open those, there's all these other files that you've never seen, MTS files, and all these random files. Don't separate that. Just grab the top-level folder, the parent folder, and drag that over your hard drive. I've had some bad luck, not personally, but users around here will just grab the streams, the video streams. They'll launch them off of the camera and they'll play fine in VLC or whatever. And then they grab just those files and drag them to the computer and suddenly they don't play anymore. Something weird like that. It really kind of depends on the camera, but a lot of this stuff is like muxing these video files all over the place. They've got different stream data in different folders, and then you've got some other file telling the player where those streams are located, all kinds of wacky things. So make sure you just get the top level directory. That was just a side note. So next up is to make a project file in your video editor. Again, Cadian Live is kind of where it's at right now for video editing, and honestly, I think that's where it should be at. It's a great application. It's just blowing my mind right now. It's really, really solid. Don't listen to anyone who says otherwise. They're wrong. Cadian Live, Cadian Live, Cadian Live. So there's Cadian Live. And then you look at it and you ask yourself, do I have to transcode? This is an interesting question because it's kind of, obviously, as I've said before, in a perfect world, you'd never want to transcode. That wouldn't be necessary. You'd always be editing and delivering and everything in its native format. There'd be no loss of quality. There'd be no conversion of data. You wouldn't have to do that. Technically speaking, Cadian Live has never bothered me about that sort of thing. I've had no issues with that whatsoever, technically speaking. Realistically, in terms of like making life easier and faster and better, I have found it beneficial to transcode more often than I would have thought I should. And by this I mean like both ends of the spectrum. The really, really high def stuff. Cadian Live will totally take, my computer will totally handle it, but it feels like I'm just wading through so much data that it's just not as responsive as it really should be. And so even just getting it out of that weird format that the camera gave it to me in, like the .mts with the audio stream somewhere else or whatever it's doing, just getting it out of that and getting it into an uncompressed data format, like what is it, Huffy UV or Huff YUV, it feels a lot quicker and snappier. So I transcode almost just to make my life easier now, rather than because the application just refuses to deal with it flat out if I don't. Same token, really, really small footage, like really compressed footage that I took with like a phone or something like that. It runs, it works, it's fine, but why would I want to edit something that compressed? Like, why not transcode it up a little bit so that I'm unlocking a little bit more color depth and everything like that? I can then go in and do color correction and other tasks without just really seeing the compression blatantly. There's some formats just don't handle that kind of tweaking very well, and so it's like, well, why bother? The frame rates are also sometimes an issue. You know, I mean, 13.3 frames per second? I mean, who's ever heard of that? It's just insane. So transcoding it turns out sometimes to be not absolutely necessary, but it just makes more sense. The transcode subroutine would be, you're in the project file. Do you need to transcode? Yes or no? If yes, then you'd send it to FFmpeg. Cadian Live even has like a built-in transcode function. It's really, really nice. You go to File, Transcode Video. It will transcode a video file, process it, and then automatically, if you choose, automatically add it to your project. So it's nearly invisible. They also provide you with the FFmpeg function or command that they're going to use to do it. So if you've got a whole folder of this stuff that you want to do and then walk away, you could do your own little bash loop and have it process the entire folder for you. It's really, really nice. But either way, it's FFmpeg, either front end or behind the scenes. So I guess I should mention that transcoding function in Cadian Live is actually one of those little features that a lot of other editors don't have, just FYI. Proprietary or free, actually. Not to that level of integration. Okay, so or in some proprietary apps, just not at all. Now you can edit. That's all in Cadian Live, no question about it. Everything you need to do, you can do there. It has some of the nicest editing tools I have encountered. There are a couple of editing features that it does not have that I might miss from time to time. Little tiny things like roll edits and ripple edits and things like that. But overall, it is a very robust editor. And by that I mean an editor, a video editor wants to have lots of different ways to do the same thing. Just like on your computer, you might want to have a lot of different ways. Now, some people don't. Some people like GNOME, where they're locked into one thing. Even GNOME 3, you're kind of locked into something. But power users tend to like more options. They like to be able to go about solving a problem in many different ways. And Cadian Live excels at that. You can add a clip to your timeline in a couple of different ways. You can hit just one key, the V key, as in Victor. Hit V, and the clip will be added into your timeline at the point of your video target, on the track that you have selected. Brilliant. Or you can, of course, drag it and drop it. There are different tools to then shorten that video clip. So if you have a video clip in your timeline and you decide, well, I really want it to come in 10 seconds later. Well, 10 frames later. Or I want to cut out of that 6 frames earlier. There are lots of different ways to do that on proprietary applications. Some of these ways I kind of miss, but KdenLive gives me some really good options. I can, again, use my mouse and nudge the endpoint over a little bit just by clicking on the edge of the video region and pulling it over. That's probably pretty familiar to you by now if you've ever used any level of video editing application. But you can also do things like place your playhead on the frame that you want to start cutting in at. Hit 1, and that will automatically snap the endpoint to the playhead, or 2, and that will snap the end point to the out point to the playhead. That is a killer feature right there. You can grab your razor. I mean, really, that's a killer feature. Like, I don't even know how to do that on any other application that I've ever used. There are things very similar to that, and there are some things that are even more specific and more keyboard-driven than that on some other applications. But that one, that is really, really slick. That's really nice. So there's that. There's the razor tool, which is actually shaped like a scissors. But yeah, hit X for your razor tool, and you can just cut where you want. There's no magnetic pull on that one, so that one I don't use quite as much. And that's another kind of a missing feature, that my razor isn't controlled by the snapping of everything else. But it's not a deal breaker, because I have that really nice 1 and 2 option for my in and out points. Really nice. I can double click on the clip and enter the values myself. That's a little bit clunkier than some other ways, other applications. You can just enter the number, and depending on which edge of the video you've got clicked, it will either subtract or add that many frames for you, and it's really, really fast and efficient. This, I actually have to double click on it and then make sure that I'm in the right field and then enter the new number. I don't love that so much. But again, it's workable and it's flexible, meaning that if that doesn't fit my style, then I don't have to use it. But if I am down to the numbers, then I can use it. Really, really nice. KdenLive has multiple video tracks, multiple audio tracks. You can add more, take them away. You can modify the size of the video tracks and the audio tracks, like the physical size. So if you're editing something with lots of tracks and it's starting to get off of your screen, you can now change that. You can make it whatever size you want. You can change the theme of the application, which seems really stupid and lame. Who cares? I care. I'll do my normal edit, with a bright white screen, with a default, just gray, default oxygen theme. Why? Well, because I'm in a dark room usually when I'm editing, and I have a cup of coffee by my computer, and if I don't have any light, then I spill my coffee. But if I've got my screen blaring, like this white screen, back at me, then I can see my cup of coffee. Very important to me. Now, when I'm doing color correction, I really don't want that. I don't want all that white trying to take over my eyes. I want to see the color of the film. And so I'll switch over to Wonton Soup or Obsidian Coast, which is, I bet you thought I was ditching the coffee and switching over to Wonton Soup. I mean, the theme is called Wonton Soup. There's another one called Obsidian Coast. Both of those two, nice dark gray themes. Plus, they look more, I mean, it's very shallow, but that looks more like a professional editor. So when people pass by my office and I'm using this thing, they see that and they literally come in and they say, "What are you using?" Whereas if it's just a big white screen, they're just like, "That's not a real video editor." Well, yes it is. It outperforms yours, but oh well. So yeah, you can change the themes, which is really important just for color correction phase. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So yeah, little things like that. You can rearrange the panels, of course. You've got an effects stack, and you can reorder all of your different effects. The effects are incredible in KdenLive. You've got blue screen and green screen controls, plus a color selection control, which you can do instead of a green and blue screen, or along with a blue and green screen, so that you can really control like the choke and the threshold of the color keying. You've got different curves, luma curves for your black and whites and your contrast levels, fades and composites, alpha channels that you can add or not add, all kinds of stuff. You can import an image sequence of, for instance, PNGs as an animation, but now I am getting ahead of myself, so let's stop raving about KdenLive for a moment, and now talk about color correction. So we've done our edit, and actually I should mention, during the edit you usually have a couple of different phases. You've got like your rough assembly, you've got your rough cut, and then you've got your first cut, and then your second cut, and third cut, and so on until you finally reach your editor's cut and your director's cut, things like that. KdenLive doesn't do that directly as smoothly as I've seen other applications do it, proprietary applications. It's probably better than any other free software so far. But with Kden Live, the little, I guess you could call it a workaround. You could also just call it a feature. What you can do is, rather than establishing a new timeline for your next cut of that project, I simply save and quit Kden Live, go out to Dolphin, and I simply copy my Kden Live project, which happens to just be an XML document, so it's like a couple of hundred kilobytes, maybe a meg or two, depending on the size of the project. I just simply copy that and rename it to Second Cut. Launch that. I'm right where I left off in my cut, and now I can go through and refine it without really losing, or, you know, without fearing, I'm not losing any amount of history, as it were. You know, I've got my revision history. So you can do that really, really easily in Kden Live. It's just not something that's kind of like built into the application. It's something you drop out and go into your file manager for. And this, of course, is something that I keep saying to people. Don't be afraid of modularity, because it's true. Modularity is power. You can do everything that you want to be able to do in your video editing application, but it doesn't mean it has to be built in, because if it's something stupid like that, honestly, I don't know, maybe programming that into Kden Live would introduce more crashiness, you know? It would be something that you'd have to, now you're opening up dozens of projects and your computer's slowing down and you're an idiot, so you don't know why, because you just open up stuff left and right. I mean, this is something that I see in a proprietary application. People have like all these projects open. Half of them don't even belong to them. They're just projects that other people have been using on that same computer, so they get opened automatically. Person never closes them. Application keeps freezing up and crashing on them. They're literally crying tears because their project, you know, they've just worked on it for 15 minutes and they've made brilliant cuts and now they're all gone. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's probably because you have 30 other people's projects open in the background and had no idea about that. Why don't you close those and just work on what you are working on? So it's like one of those features that isn't there in Kden Live. And after I stood back and looked at it, I was like, wow, that's actually really brilliant that it's not in there, because now I get to drop out of Kden Live. I get to go into my file manager and just make a copy of the file and reopen it. And now suddenly I have my revision control and I don't have a bunch of projects open in my editor, which can be a good thing sometimes. Okay, back to color correction. So at some point, I make a copy of my project, and I call it color.kdenlive, or, you know, whatever, projectname.color.kdenlive. And I go into sort of the color correction mode. And color correction is really something that you want to do by scene. And because, I mean, think about it. If you've got two people talking over coffee, and they're in a cafe, and it's very warm, and there's a lot of sort of organic, you know, wooden tables and soft lighting, stuff like that. It's a very warm scene. And then they go outside into the city street and it's winter, the dead of winter. It's really cold and we want it to look different. It's bright maybe, or maybe it's not bright. It's dark and it's blue. It's very outside looking. It's very cold looking. We want it to come across as harsh, a really stark contrast between outside and inside in the cafe. So for that, you don't really want to go back and forth and color correct those two scenes, right? You want to just stay in the cafe for this sitting. Stay in the cafe. Look at the cafe scenes. Look at what needs to happen. Are the skin tones natural? Get them natural. Get them looking good. What about the rest of the cafe? Do we need to add anything or take away something to that? Is there too much blue coming in from the window? Did someone not gel the window properly? Or what's going on? You know, so you stay in that cafe, you color correct that cafe, and you look at how it goes from shot to shot to shot. So if you've got the guy talking in one shot, and then you cut to the girl talking, and then the guy talking, and then the girl talking, you want that to match. They're in the same cafe. They're at the same table. You want it not to look noticeable that we're cutting from the guy to the girl, from the guy to the girl. We want it to look like a very fluid kind of thing. We want those cuts to be very invisible. We don't want people to notice those cuts. Otherwise, they stop and they think, am I watching a movie? I thought I was watching someone's life story and it was beautiful and it was making me feel a certain way, but now I'm realizing I'm watching a movie. Wow, how weird. You don't want them to ever think that. You want them to think that they're right there at the table with the guy and the girl listening to the conversation. You want those cuts to be invisible. So you color correct those cuts together. Now, if you had to, because this is how movies are made, right? You cut from the guy, and then you cut to the girl, and then you cut to the guy. If you had to color correct the guy, and then you color correct the girl, and then you are back on the guy again, wouldn't it be great to use those same settings? Sure it would. In Kden Live, you can just copy that clip, and then you can paste just the effects onto the next occurrence of that clip. This is a very important feature that, again, I haven't really seen in that many editors, free editors, the ability to just copy the effects and dump them onto different shots, and then you can tweak them from there. Very important, very nice. Kden Live does that. Kden Live also happens to have one of the nicest color correction tools that I've ever seen. I'm not kidding. It's amazing. It's a curve, and it gives you the complementary colors. So there's red, and the complementary of that is, of course, cyan. Green complementary would be magenta. Blue complementary would be yellow. So you've got those two things as your extremes, and you've got a line between those two diagonal, and you can make it curve. And if you pull up for instance, the middle of that curve, then you're affecting sort of the mid-tones of that picture, where you could do the same thing to the highlights, the upper part of that, the shoulder of that curve. Or you could do it to the little foot of that curve. So you've got really finely tuned controls, not just the controls themselves, but over the areas that you're affecting in the picture. To do this on another application, I used to have to go through all kinds of weird hoops to limit what my effect was affecting. And it was not the most efficient way of doing this, and it wasn't always the most precise. The Kdenlive version of this is just, it's brilliant. It's unbelievable. I don't know. I need to tell them how great this is, because it really is great. And of course, you can add multiple level controls to the clip, so you can have one curve being your luma curve, so that you can kind of make the shadows darker and maybe some of the bright spots brighter, kind of increase that contrast to give it more of a traditional film look. And then you can bring in another one and color correct their skin and make it a little bit warmer. Then you bring another one and do something else. Lots of great options on this. I don't even know how to fully express my elation at the color correction tools in Kdenlive. So that's really it. That's all there is to say about color correction. Once you're finished that step of the project, the next step would be to send out the project to your compositor, your compositing artist. The way that this is always done is that you simply select the in and the out point in your master timeline of the scene that needs the compositing effect. That's all the compositors ever need. It's just that one shot that they are going to put an effect on. So you select the in and the out point on your timeline, and then you export just the in and the out point on the timeline. Selecting that in and out, you want to export it in a very peculiar way, actually. You don't export it as a movie. You export it into a folder somewhere as a series of images. And usually it's something that you want to export at full quality. So you usually are going to go out as a TIFF or something like that. So it's full quality, frame by frame, of that scene. Why do we do it frame by frame? Well, because animation programs, that's how they work. They are a series of images, and an animator is going to bring in your series of video images and then put their animation over that, and then they're going to export it back out as a series of images and then send that series of images to you, which you're going to want to be able to import as a series of images. So you export it as a TIFF, and then you send it to your compositor, and the compositor is going to import it as a series of images. Turns out that both Blender and Synfig Studio are wonderful at this. They do that sort of thing. They do that very well. They import image sequences. You can animate over them. You can put whatever you want to, integrate it with those images, rotoscope them, whatever you need to do, add an effect for, you know, lightsaber effect, whatever, laser bolts, flying explosions. And again, the Linux things that you would do that with are Blender and Synfig. Both of those two applications are really solid animation programs, depending on what you need to do. Obviously, Synfig is going to be more for like either animating on top of your picture, whether it's a laser bolt or a lightsaber or something, while Blender would be maybe something a little bit more. Maybe you actually have a reason. You have some 3D object that you need to integrate into the picture, whatever. They do their magic, and then they send you back the image sequence, and you import that image sequence as a series of images, but it's going to appear as a video region. This is a feature that Kdenlive has. I'm pretty sure I haven't seen that in other ones, but I could be wrong. And there'd always be a workaround, right? You could always go into FFmpeg and say, okay, see that series of images, make it into a movie, and then import it into your other application, whatever it would be. But Kdenlive directly has that ability. It's very obvious, very easy to use, and it imports it, and it looks exactly like any other video to you. So you drop that in, and now you're ready for your picture lock. There's nothing really about it. Picture lock that you need to do. You just need to declare it. You say, okay, this is it. This is the picture lock. Maybe make a new file in Kdenlive, copy of your file, call that your locked picture. And then you need to do essentially the same thing, except not for video, but with sound. So you export just the dialogue tracks. And I say just the dialogue because a lot of times people have temp music tracks or temp effects that you don't really want to use. You just, as an editor, you wanted something in there to kind of help you convey and focus in on what you're trying to do in that scene. So exporting just the dialogue tracks as self-standing audio files that have the duration of your entire movie, or at least the entire segment of the movie that is in that particular file if you've split it up into different files. But for a short film, for instance, if your short film from beginning to end is 15 minutes, then you export it as a full track. It will be 15 minutes. And then when someone opens it in their audio, inside of their audio application, they have 15 minutes of audio. That way, when they add stuff to that and layer stuff under it and all the other stuff that they're going to do, they send it back to you. The overall length and the overall frame rate and everything like that hasn't changed at all. Just going to import right back into your video editing application, drop right in. That's exactly what you want. The proprietary equivalent of this, if I'm recalling correctly, are OMF files, essentially. Those are files that you typically pass from your video editor to, like, the Pro Tools rig. Whoever's gonna be doing the mixing, they'll want an OMF file. And that's got, I forget what kind of data that has in it. It might have some indication of when a audio region ends and begins and stuff like that. But I typically, honestly, I never used those. I just sent the files out as self-contained complete audio files. Sent it out to the audio mixer. However, how many audio files you'll have will be variable. I mean, if you've got people talking over each other, then you'd want to send them at least two audio files, right? Because they want both of those two dialogues isolated. But if it's literally just people talking in sequence and they all fit onto one audio track without any kind of layering, then you can send them one audio track. So I generally send them two or four audio tracks, depending on the project. The audio application that you'll be using for the mix, of course, is up to you. Audacity, Ardour, Q-Tractor, those are your options. Now, I saw somewhere once that someone had rigged Jack and Ardour and maybe like MPlayer so that MPlayer was using the Jack transport and Ardour was using the Jack transport, so you could actually see the image exactly where the image was when you were doing a certain thing. This is really handy, it's really modern, and it's really cool because then you as the mixer or whoever your mixer is can say, okay, right there, that look right there, that's where I want the music to start. Or right as that person taps that button, I want the sound effect for the button to be pressed to happen. I mean, that's pretty common. Or right there when they pull the trigger, that's when I want the gunshot to happen. Those kinds of things are, granted, important. And if you don't have that kind of synchronization between the audio editing application and your locked picture, it would be, well, impossible to line up the sound effects with your picture, except that they didn't always have that. And since film has been around for 100 years, it seems like they must have had some trick up their sleeve before we had all this fancy technology, and sure enough they did, and they're called click tracks, and you've probably heard about these, probably in like documentaries and stuff about filmmaking. A click track is something that the editor can do before they send out the file to the audio person, and that is to create what would be called a click track. And you can place a little click, some kind of indication, where an important event is supposed to happen, or an important event video-wise is happening, and so you need some kind of audio cue to go there. And then you write down, okay, the click that you hear at around 13, 24, 10 is the gunfire. So make sure that that click gets assigned a gunshot. And that, I mean, honestly, for me, that's worked out brilliantly, and that's what I've done. I have not gotten to the trouble at all so far of trying to rig some kind of Jack, MPlayer, Ardour solution together. I'm not opposed to the idea. I just happen to not have gone to the trouble of making that happen for myself yet. And instead, I just do it old school, make a click track. Of course, that click track needs to be its own audio track. I'm sure that you have figured that out, but I mean, you wouldn't want that click track to be part of the dialogue track or anything like that, because the audio editor is obviously going to want to be able to turn that on and turn that off and export the final product without clicks in it. But that would be the old school and yet completely legit and functional way of indicating when certain audio cues are supposed to happen in the soundtrack in accordance with the picture. And again, that's why it's important to have your picture lock before you send your sound off to the mixer to make sure that it's going to get mixed. You don't want to change it at that point at all, for sure. That's the audio mix. It's not that hard. Once it's all finished, then the mixer, like I've already said, sends you back a set of audio files. And again, this, when I say they send you back, it might be you wearing a different hat, sending yourself back a set of files. But we'll pretend like we're in a big production facility and we have different people doing all this. So they would send you a dialogue track, an effects track, like a Foley track. Sometimes a Foley and effects track, because you're going to have like the background noise and explosions and footsteps and all that. All that's going to be on one track. No real reason to separate those two from each other. Dialogue will be on its own track, and the music cues will be on its own track. So you get three tracks back, let's say, and then you just drop those into the video editor. So you just create three new audio tracks, drop them in, start them at 00000, and they'll run until the end, and you're done. That's the final product. At some point during this time, you'd be adding things like titles and stuff like that, or you might have had your compositing artist do that for you. Whatever, that's not that big of a deal. Pretty self-explanatory. Once everything's kind of together and married in the same timeline, then you can export the full project as a big, uncompressed master, gold master file that will never be deleted. It will be backed up. It is the gold master. Export that possibly as separate files if you want to keep your audio and your video, you know, completely separate, which I advise. So you've already got your audio track. So now just get a gold master of your video and put that in the same folder, zip it up or tar it up or whatever, and then back it up immediately. So you got your gold master, and from that you can make all your copies, you know, your MPEG 4 version for the web, your OGG version for the other web, your DVD file for the DVD stuff, and, you know, however you're going to distribute the thing. That's it. That is the complete workflow, and now you know all the different tools that you might need for such a thing. And really, it's not that many. It's Kdenlive Live for the video editing, FFmpeg for all the back-end heavy lifting, Blender and or Synfig for effects and titling and compositing, and some audio application. Audacity is perfectly fine, but you could do it with Ardour or Qtractor as well for your mix. That's it. That's all. Everything is there. So let this be a notice that multimedia, full multimedia film production is completely possible and feasible and doable on GNU Linux. That went on a lot longer than I'd actually expected, but that's okay. So I was going to talk a little bit about some digital distribution stuff, but it wasn't really that interesting anyway, and it's something that I could probably rant about later because it was just a rant. Hopefully this has been informative. I know that I haven't specifically compared Kdenlive to other video editors out there, and I think, again, I don't think I can do that effectively. I think that, number one, I'd have to try a lot of video editors and list all the stuff that they don't have that I want, and probably at some point it would all just be my opinion versus your opinion, so it doesn't feel like that's the way to go about it. Hopefully this was a more informative and sort of overall view of what exactly a professional video editor actually wants in their professional video editing application. And hopefully it's giving you kind of an overview of that process and where each step of the way these different technologies can come into play. So thanks for listening. I'm Klaatu. You can find the website for the show at ogcastplanet.org/GNU World Order. You can find me online on IRC as Not Klaatu in the channel Ogcast Planet or Slacker Media. You can find me on the Jabber network via IM at notklaatu@jabber.org and via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next time.